Take some more calls.
Hello there.
Hello, Brian.
Yeah, hi.
It's Greg Tingle speaking. How you doing?
Greg, I'm fine, thanks.
That's good. I switched on the radio as I was leaving a media course in Redfern this evening, and I was fortunate enough to come across yourself.
Oh, thank you.
I'd like to congratulate you and 2GB for a huge team effort.
Thank you.
I think basically it just all came together, I think, around the end of the year, and these couple of months into 2003, things have really kicked on for yourselves, haven't they?
That's right, yeah.
So, what do you think? You're still having an inside look at it. What do you really think did it for yourselves to become number one?
It's so difficult. It could have been something the opposition did.
It comes from that and sort of like strategic. Someone does something right in life and someone does something wrong.
Yeah, all these things are relative. I know that I don't know everything that the opposition does, but I know a few of the things that they've said, which are unbelievably stupid, and we'd be really happy that they've done it.
Well, that's
so one of them, a peroxide character, has gone down, I think, to 5.2,
right,
about half what he has most of the time,
yeah,
because he said some really, really stupid things, and eventually the audience will punish you if you insult them.
Well,
it's taken a while, as a matter of fact. I'm surprised it didn't happen about 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You can get so far on BS, and then the audience wakes up.
And I think sometimes if you've got a solid, like, team game plan and do everything just well, it doesn't have to be totally exceptional every single time, but if everybody's on the same team, keep on hanging in there, continual improvement, and the listeners will tune into that, and then it starts to sway your way.
That's part of it, but bear in mind, being a talk station, a lot of the talking is done by people like you who are calling in. Now, we have to have a better standard of caller in order to present a better standard of talk station.
Well, that makes
we're only part of the team. You are part of the team, you see.
Well, that's it. So it's sort of like complimentary, isn't it? So
that's
like
correct,
good programming,
yeah.
You attract those listeners, they'll call in and it all flows on. Now, there's a few things I'd like to discuss tonight, Brian.
Yeah.
Now, I thought, while there's so much havoc going on in the world and everyone's picking on people, so to speak, like, you know, there was the anti-war thing and some people have suggested it was part anti-Bush and anti-Blair, and I think to a certain extent that was correct. There's a lot of people that are a little bit confused with the current situation and perhaps concerned about where the great country of Australia is going.
Mm-hmm.
I thought for a change we might actually rise up a few people instead of putting a few people down. Now, you mentioned a fellow which I was quite familiar with before, Tim Bristow. He had a few clues, but did you know, unfortunately, Tim passed away recently?
Oh, I knew. My word, you couldn't possibly miss that. And I know that for many years in the 60s, almost every young man on the North Shore was conspiring to have him killed. In jest, not seriously, but just wondering if you could ever...
I wasn't one of them. I'm an ex-Newport boy. I actually lived around the corner.
You must remember, anyone that went to the arms,
yep,
what the stories about the drunk that was beaten senseless because he didn't get his feet off the table or he didn't get rid of his drink and leave when he had to.
Yeah.
And nobody wanted to put this to the test, but you always wondered if you ever came across a guy who was 8 feet tall and looked like Mike Tyson, then you'd bring him in and see if there was anyone that could beat Tim Bristow.
History of Australia. That's right, he's got an interesting reputation, but I'll tell you what, not everyone knows this. He was a very giving man, very giving of his heart and very giving of his time, and he did actually...
Really?
Yes, this is absolutely the truth.
I know a girl that went out with him once. Beautiful girl. She used to drive the getaway car, as it were, when he chased people for evidence for divorce cases.
Well, there you go. And as you would know, there's two or three sides to every single story, Brian.
Yeah.
And I'd say there's your side, if you like, or there's whoever's side. There's my side, and then there's the truth. And in this interesting world, there's often a lot of grey thrown in there.
And we often don't find the truth until long after the event.
That's right.
And you have to average out the various perspectives.
Yes, and he actually helped me out with a couple of things.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he was good. I would have hired him if I needed to drive it out.
Well, that's right. And he helped my sister out, even as recently as about 1 month before he passed away.
Really?
Yes, because you know what happens in life? People, they start getting successful, and then all of a sudden people come out of the woodwork and they try to tear people down. And as you would also know, in this world, a lot of people don't like the cop of a dose of their own medicine, so to speak, do they?
Depends what the medicine was.
Well, you know, like, but you might have, let's use a politician, right, as an example, and someone might do a little bit of something untoward, then when it comes back to bite them,
oh, yeah,
they're not all that happy. Like, they don't mind giving it out,
yeah,
right? that they don't like to take it. And he was one of those people, he could stand up to people that were putting people down, and, you know, and sort of, like, when no one else would help, Jim was always there to take
blame. Well, I hope his solicitors were released to the public, at least on public television or maybe on the internet, whatever night vision movies he's been making of people in high places.
There would be an
he's been following people around Macquarie Street.
Yes.
I want to see these movies. I want to see what they really did in real life.
Yes.
If Jim hasn't done it, I hope he had some apprentices to whom he taught the skills that he had and passed them on so they can follow these people around with the night vision cameras.
There are
people make some good viewing, let me tell you.
It certainly would. There is actually a possibility that there will be a movie or a movie documentary done one day. In fact, Kevin Perkins is writing a book.
Oh, yes.
Yes, so...
can I just say that when I read the obituaries in the media and they talked about pushing people off buildings and murder and all this kind of stuff,
yep.
But they didn't talk about his reputation at the Newport Arms.
Well, there you go.
And I'm here to tell you that there were no exceptions. All the fellas who'd ever been to the Newport Arms had stories to tell.
Well,
in the paper, they had him knocking Tony Madigan out.
Really?
The story that I heard was that Madigan couldn't beat him.
Really?
Oh, walked into a standstill but couldn't beat him.
I heard about a year ago, one time in the Newport Arms, somebody actually did knock Tim Bristow to the floor.
Yes.
Tim was such a man, he got back up and he shook the guy's hand. Congratulations, I mean, if you've done that, then you know you've got to...
He would do that.
Special.
Yeah, I guess he would.
Tough man.
Yeah.
Now, while we're rising people up, I'd like to thank Max Rowley, who's teaching me some presentation skills.
I was going to ask you about your media course. Which media courses?
Well, I'm actually doing two. I'm doing news media and journalism at Tradition TAFE.
Oh, yes.
That's headed up by Dennis Hefferman and also...
Yeah, look, give us a favour. Don't give us any names.
Okay, I'll...
We're not supposed to give names at all.
Okay. A young guy by the name of Josh, which you fellows may be familiar with. Josh has been very supportive.
Oh, yes.
And also, there's a fellow named Darren, and I found Darren to always be a man of his word. He's a little bit south, but I can't really give away too much, can I? I'd like to say thank you.
We're not doing names, okay?
Okay. Right. There's an organisation called the Voice of Australia.
Yes.
And also the...
Who are they?
Well, basically, they stand up for the people that have been sort of being dictated to by Australian government, if you like.
That's a pretty wide category, isn't it?
It's a little bit radical, a bit left-wing, but basically they get out and about.
What's it called again?
Voice of Australia.
Voice of Australia.
V-O-I-C-E. So if you look them up on the internet, you'll probably come across a little something.
What are they mainly concerned about then?
Well, basically, just some things which aren't right in the world, like, say, for example, I mean, the other week, I travelled from Maroubra up to Parramatta, and back to Maroubra again.
Oh, because you're a social climber for a moment.
Well, I mean, I'm not shy, but I mean, it wasn't something I set out to do. It was all that distance in one day.
You just fell asleep on the train, right?
Mate, I drove.
Oh, you drove, right.
About $12 in tolls.
Really?
About $5 in parking meters.
Yeah.
Now, why do we pay registration? We're paying road tax. We're paying all of this. And the government just wants to take. I mean, Bondi, Coogee, I mean, all over the place, you've got parking meters, and I mean, per hour, what is it, like $5, or, I mean, they just don't know when to stop. I mean, just things like that.
Maybe they just want to discourage people from parking there.
Well, I mean, but you've got to park somewhere. I mean, what's next? Are we going to start charging people to go to the beach, or, I mean...
Well, they do, in effect, they've been doing that for years by charging them to park.
Yeah, and in some countries, they charge people to go to public toilets.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
They used to do that here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like there's no stop to it. And another thing, talking about government's enforcing thing, I'd like to applaud the Howard government for not actually forcing some soldiers to get the vaccination business.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'd be damned. I mean, I'm former Australian Army Reserve from 1991.
Yeah.
I did the full 3 years and I was prepared to put my life on the line to defend our great country. I'm glad that nobody there was basically sticking a needle towards me and saying, look, we want to put in some anti-whatever.
Yeah.
Because basically, I mean, it can't be too good for you, can it? If you're putting something in there that's got something to do with anthrax, I mean, imagine whatever sort of chemical reaction.
The whole cocktail might be a bit of an assault on your immune system.
Well, I guess so.
That's the problem.
And it's also been suggested that traditional immunisation, there may be some issues with that as well. And again, if you go searching through, doctors' manuals and this kind of thing and the web and just really fully research it, there's still a lot of question marks remaining about vaccination, the principles here. Full stop.
There's one thing you can say about the establishment, particularly the medical establishment, they do not tolerate dissent. They believe they have a mortgage on the truth.
But there's a lot of money involved in medical.
I'm sure they know all about surgery and repair, and they know an enormous amount about many topics. I did a year of med. I know just how hard those guys work.
Yeah.
But they don't have a mortgage on the truth.
No, well, there's just...
There are alternatives.
And I believe the doctors, they sort of all stick to the one story.
Yeah.
As we know, it's a very lucrative profession as well, so they tend to stick together at times.
Well, you say very lucrative. If you're a specialist, you make a lot of money. If you're a GP, you don't end up with that much at the end of the year by the time you paid for the receptionist and the secretary and the taxes and all the rest. It means you've got a good credit rating, that's all.
That's right.
It means you, every few years you can buy a four-wheel drive.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just getting back to the possible war situation for a moment. Now, people are saying, okay, America's got all these weapons. Well, that's fine, but at least they're not using them against their own people, are they? I mean...
They are, as a matter of fact, yes, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Well, I guess...
Hold on a second, Greg. Let me tell you, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1950s,
what?
They dropped radioactive dust from an aircraft over Seattle in the northwest.
Well,
they didn't ask the people's permission to irradiate them with fallout. They wanted to see if they got cancer, and every 5 years the doctors would come to town, do a bit of a medical check, like they do for TB or something. People weren't told.
Is that
they'd be
a dose.
This, sorry?
Is that an absolute fact?
That's correct. That
I didn't know that, and I'll stand corrected, because I didn't know that.
This is from Freedom in Written Information. Keith Sutter, who is an expert on world affairs, is my guest on Monday nights, every Monday between 9 and 10.
Okay.
He told us about that a couple of years ago.
Okay.
It was in the public domain that bureaucrats, that's health bureaucrats, had been injecting children who had cancer with plutonium. Not to kill them, but just to see what plutonium did, because here we had a disposable child.
That's terrible.
And I believe they sent children with hydrocephalus up under high altitude balloons in the very early days of the space race, because there was no one to answer for them, no one to claim them. When they landed, people thought they were aliens. You might recall Roswell.
Yeah, I do.
Now, I was talking to someone on Saturday night about this theory. I went home and I watched a movie that I bought at a $2 shop about freaks. And there was a kid that looked just like the alien.
Really?
The child with his enormous head, tiny nose, tiny mouth, and these big eyes, and this giant head that's twice as wide as a normal head. Looked just like an alien. If you weren't a doctor and you hadn't seen these, you'd swear there was something bland at the open outer space.
Oh, gee.
So the Americans have experimented with their own people. Not all of them, but just the ones they needed. Just like Dr. Mengele in Nazi Germany.
Well, I mean, I learned something. I wasn't aware of that. I'd heard of Roswell, but I wasn't aware of those specific instances. I guess, in defense of George Bush, at least unlike Saddam Hussein and his son Abu, at least, with Abu, do you know what he does for hobbies?
He tortures people.
That's right.
Yeah.
He tortures, he's Olympians.
He's a psycho.
Yeah. And, it's just terrible, but I guess they're different sorts of crimes from what you're saying. I mean,
they're not doing all this just to liberate Iraq.
Mm.
That makes it look as if they're really good, nice people. They are doing this as part of a long-term plan to protect Israel and to protect their royal interests in the East. That's what it's about. Not about liberating the people from Iraq at all. Otherwise, they'd be going to Zimbabwe.
What do you see as the ultimate solution?
You mean my solution to George Bush or what George Bush is
saying? Yeah, I mean, just in general, obviously we don't live in utopia. There's problems in the world, but what approach would you suggest?
I would, since we can't control what America or any of these other characters are up to, or the other peoples, we should be developing highly developed civil defence. And like the Chinese or the Swiss or the Swedes have been doing, and the Russians for years, when they feared nuclear war, they dug bunkers for their people. I've been in the nuclear bunker under Beijing. It is enormous.
Right.
Countless kilometers of tunnels designed to evacuate a huge proportion of the city up to the other side of the Lee Mountains, which is the equivalent of people entering tunnels around Winyarden Town Hall and coming up on the other side of Katoomba.
I just say Australia is obviously a bit of a unique situation, given that we've got all that open water and coastline out there. And I mean, it's well documented the amount of boat people that have successfully got here in the past, and there was alleged sightings of ships off the coast.
But that's the least of our worries.
But I mean, imagine if a whole lot of, hypothetically, right? A whole lot of Indonesians all arrive at once or whoever, if they all come in at once.
Well, they'll starve to death in the desert in most cases.
Well, they've got to go through the water first. But, they're all the hypotheticals. But I just admire John Howard for having the guts to serve another term. I mean, it's not an easy job. It's a thankless task, isn't it?
That's right.
And, I think every Australian, when you think about it, I think somewhat you've got to at least respect John Howard just for standing up and sticking by his principles and hanging in there and not walking away when a lesser man would.
Well, he's got a very tough job.
He has.
He really can never go on holidays. Not fair to him, holidays.
No.
He's got to take his work home with him. He's got to answer to people, important people calling him. And he doesn't make many decisions. The Prime Minister, as Alan Jones pointed out years ago to me, the Prime Minister is the deal maker. I'll do this for you if your people do this for me, sort of thing. He doesn't get up like a king and say, I will decree such and such.
Well, they get a lot of advisors, don't they?
Yeah, they don't have a lot of power. They're just the top deal maker. Anyway, I have to go, Greg.
It's good talking to you.
Good luck with your media studies. Thanks for calling. 29 past 11 on 2GB. Back in a moment.